You are listening to BensTorah.com.
It's the ninth book I've been privileged to publish. And some of you know that some of my books have gone through four editions already. This book is very different than anything I've ever published. It was very difficult dealing with the actual publication and getting it right. And I'm very pleased it came out as it should. There are four different divisions to the book. Any other book I've written, you just flow. These books, you have to be in four different worlds, four different modes. And I'm only going to talk about the fourth division. The first division is quite important for this particular synagogue, Shul Beit Medrash, because it's about 120 pages dealing with Rabbi Rachman's proposal, Hafkat Kedushin. And I disagree with the former great spiritual leader of this congregation. I show that there's a big distinction between Hafkat Kedushin and Mekach Ta'ut, and we can't just retroactively abrogate, nullify marriages today. But you'll see the lamdanit, and you can agree with me or disagree. Why are we getting a little bang here? The second division is a continuation of my wife and myself, our work in communist Russia, and quite a few pictures that are of historic importance, people who risked their lives in the 80s, growing up in Russia, to come back to Torah Hashem Tamima. The third division, which I alluded to yesterday in my talk in the afternoon, it's a compilation of articles, research that I've published in the last 20 years since early editions of Rakafat Aaron, Chelik Aleph, Chelik Bet were published. And you'll find it quite interesting, the Rav, the Rebbe, the Rav, Yeshiva University, Professor Shaul Lieberman, Meir Kahana, I have two pieces on him. Again, I state I'm not a Kahananik, but you can't paint the man entirely fascist as they do in Israel. He did a lot of good in his life, and perhaps I'm only standing here because he started me on the journey to the land of Israel as my Madrich in B'nai Akiva. There's other material there, as you will see. The fourth division turns out to be the most important, and already at Yeshiva University, they're quite happy with something, and I'll get to that later on. Art Scroll, in their volumes in history, at times create a world that is incorrect. Many times I've written to them, I hate to tell you I've never gotten answers, although one of your former rabbis here promised me he had books published by Art Scroll, and he would see to it that I got answers. Anechtekatag, Meir Tzitung can be dancing a hora now if I got answers from Art Scroll. And it really troubles me because we have to be market toiva to what happened here in the United States 100 years ago, 120 years ago. There's an entire history. Torah did not begin with the refugees coming after World War II. That they added, enhanced, and made an unbelievable contribution, that goes without saying. But the first floor was already here. Yes, today we can say we have a skyscraper, but you don't have a skyscraper unless you have a foundation. And when you read the volume, for instance, on Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch, which is a wonderful volume outside of what I'm referring to, the volume on Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, it's as if Rabbi Revel did not exist. And is this the chasm, the enmity between right wing in America and Yeshiva University has gone on for time immemorial. And that is absolutely not true. I don't want to make myself clear. You can be upset with Yeshiva University today, but on the same level, You can be upset with Lakewood Yeshiva. When I learned in Lakewood, 102 Talmidim, it all centered around the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbarin Kotler. No one would miss a shiur that Rabbarin gave, a shmuis that Rabbarin gave. Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva, ein kleinigkeit. No, today Lakewood, I ask a simple question. There are four Rosh Yeshiva, each one gives a shiur once a month. Ask the students what percentage of the thousands learning in Lakewood attend the shiurim. It's a different institution today, all right? You don't like it, you can be critical, but you can't deny what was 70, 80 years ago. Yeshiva University today, you don't have to agree what is, but just think back to 1886 when Yeshiva Deitz Chaim began, 1897 when Yeshiva Yitzchak Chanan began, when they merged, 1950, organized Talmudical Academy. It's earth-shaking. Reeds, Smicha, American-trained Rabbanim, 1919, Yeshiva College. And there was wonderful feeling between Torah Vadas and what we call today Yeshiva University. So what the Ribbono Shel Olam privileged me to come up with, this is the Modat Evel that Torah Vadas put into the Yiddish newspapers when Rabbi Revel died. And you'll read the Modat Evel, they call Rabbi Revel the greatest gaon, what this man did in America, harav, hagaon, hagadol, kaliya, hamada, vachochma, babitz, torah, barabim, malatuk, holda, harav, reb, dov, revel, zal, nasi, yeshiva university, yeshivas, reb, it's called Chanan, and it goes on, and it's signed by Rashi, umanalecha, yeshiva, teire, vedas, vahametifta. If that's not enough, I uncovered a gentleman. 22 years ago, we were just together last Shabbat. Erwin Waxman from West Hempstead. Anyone know him here? Well into his 90s today. Alert, with it. And I had Erwin give a statement before a lawyer and an actuary. Beryl Phillips. Anyone know Beryl Phillips? Brooklyn, West Hempstead, today Muncie. And in this statement, you'll read about what happened in Torah Vadas the day of Rabbi Revel's funeral. How two of the main teachers at the time, names that any Torah Vadas person here will recognize, Rav Avraham Pam and Rav Nussan Quinn, and a whole group of students, including Irvin Waxman, was sent uptown to Yeshiva University of today to say Tehillim at the coffin and to attend the Levaya of Rabbi Dov Revel. So I rest my case. We can have difference of opinion, which I hope is done in dignity and dialogue, not in enmity. Two Talmidim just called me this week what I call sub-Talmidim, what they call virtual Talmidim. I call them sub-Talmidim because last Sukkot I walked into the Inbal. Talmid from the 60s invited us to eat with him on Yontif. And people saw me and they ran over like a submarine coming out of water. Are you Harav Rakefet? And I said, I'm Aaron Rakefet. I wasn't born with the title Rav. And they embraced me, they hugged me, and they're my Sheyorim, and these are Muncie people. And then they disappear again. So those are sub-Talmidim. So I have to tell you that we can have arguments, we can differ. Two sub-Talmidim called me this week, and they called to thank me. They're both raised in the Haredi world. And both of them, totally different locations, one not knowing the other one, said to me, and I quote, "We remain frum because of you." There's a way to dialogue, but to dialogue in dignity. Okay. Page 308, I have a picture. The picture is the REITS faculty, 1944. And I identify everyone in the picture. Well, when you pick up the book, Gershon, you have to say, what's the Rebbe being machadish here? He already published this picture in the Rav many years ago. And I think I identified the faculty there. What am I adding? What am I being machadish? Well, if I tell you the whole story, we'll be here until Tisha B'Av. So let me be very brief. 50 years ago, as I said yesterday, 2 weeks, now it's 2 days, Malcolm, myself, our children, got off the boat in Haifa and arrived in Israel as Olim Chadashim. To a certain respect, once an Olim Chadash, always an Olim Chadash. My children are totally Israelis, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. Malcolm and I, as Malcolm always says, we're the Dor HaMidbar. We're caught between two cultures, which is fine. It's good. It's realistic. The Eben Ezra, those of you familiar with what I'm alluding to. How do you succeed? You come to a new country, a new culture, a new language, a new way of going to the bank, the post office, the grocery store. And it's not simple. Israel is the simplest country to be on Olim Chadash because the country is geared for Olim Chadashim. We're going on to 7 million Jews in the state of Israel. The country began with 500,000 Jews, 600,000 Jews at the time of the 48th war. So the overwhelming majority either were born or were Olim Chadashim. The country is geared to it. As I said yesterday, you walk the streets of Rehavia, Katamon, all you hear is English and French. When we came in Aliyah, we heard German in Rehavia yet. But imagine you come to America, a greenhorn, a refugee. It's a struggle. And here I refer to the Zohar. The Zohar says, Hakol talui b'mazel. Afilu sefer Torah shebeheichal. Everything is mazel. I'll open up there in Kodesh. How many Torahs do you have here? The one I take out, it's mazel big. I took out that Torah, not the other four, not the other five. I've often told my Talmidim, what does mazel mean? The right person in the right place at the right time. So there was an immigrant that Rabbi Revel saved from Europe. He was a Telsha, a Gon, the brightest student in Telz Yeshiva. He learned the Chavruta with the Rosh Yeshiva's son, Reb Chaim Rabinovich's son, who was later killed by Hitler, Yimach Shmo. Came to America, taught in Baltimore Talmudical Academy. Rabbi Revel, 2 years later, brought him to New York, and he became a Rebbe in Yeshivas Reb Tzchok Hanan. He was my Rebbe for my 2 years before I went into the Rav Shir. His name was Shmuel Eliezer Volk. I trust you all heard of the name. A Gon Adia Kudshim Tarit, later offered 8 major Sfarim Shaharei Toha. And he was my Rebbe. And you always felt the frustration, the sadness of a man who would have been number one in Telz in Europe. And in America, no, it's a Heiskelacht, a Europäische, a Greenhorn. It was on one vein, wonderful to be connected to Telz, but on the other level, you felt how much this man suffered. Later in life, 1960, and I've spoken about it many times, the Rav switched to English, a Talmud, can't go into it now, but a Talmud forced the Rav to give the Sheirim in English. In my humble opinion, Torah ended in America at that moment that the Rav switched to English. That's my opinion. When I learned in Lakewood, they convinced me. I can still remember Ephraim Zucker, Zichrono Levracha, from Baltimore. He convinced me The Eibishtot gerät Yiddish mit Moshe Rabbeinu. Wie kann das sein anders? The Ribbono Shel Olam spoke Yiddish with, can't be different. And I believe him until today. I hope you realize I have a sense of humor. But in every joke, there's a little truth. So I'm a klisheni, but my Talmidim today are klishlishi, a klirevii. The Rav switched to English. Once the Rav switched to English, it was inevitable that every shir in the yeshiva would wind up in English. And this was a death sentence for Rebbeim like Reb Noach Bunshtein, like Reb Yeruchim Gerelik. The only one that successfully made the transition outside of the Rav was Reb David Lifshitz. He switched to Hebrew. And the kids already were coming back from Kerem Biavna, so they understood Reb David and his Hebrew. Well, Rav Volk took ill, and he was out for 2-3 years, and he came back to health, heart problems, but he could teach again. He was already late 60s, and the yeshiva told him, look, you don't have Talmidim who will understand you. We need younger men, we need American teachers, English speakers. Your retirement age, you'll have Social Security, you have a pension. They refused to take him back. He took the yeshiva to labor court, and the yeshiva won. And he was very angry. And he published 2 more volumes, his children, very successful, most of them, paid for the publication. And in the introductions, he was very critical of the yeshiva, of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, of Rav Shmuel Belkin, the second president Rosh Yeshiva, and of the new president Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Nachum or Norman Lamb. And over the years, the yeshiva decided, in art scroll fashion, that Rabbi Volk does not exist. And this very picture recently, the last 10, 15 years, distributed, it hangs in an office upstairs in Gris, in Yerushalayim, and it has all the names, and when it comes to Rabbi Volk, it says unknown. And I felt very bad. I don't justify his being critical, writing it, but a person has to understand. I had mazel. I alluded to it yesterday. 69, BMT is formed. They hit me, bring me in. My whole life changed. I found my calling. A Talmud Chacham, they say, I don't say, but at least I try to be. Who knows baseball? It's just what American kids need. And as they say, the rest is history. Whenever I meet a teacher in one of the myriad of Anglo institutions, I say, you owe me 2% of your salary. I deserve a finder's fee. Plain and simple. Rabbi Volk didn't have mazel. I'll never forget, this story says it all. Rabbi Volk, 1956. I'm giving you living history now. Anyone who's going to, well, where's Yossi? Yossi, beyond your doctorate, you'll do more. Write this down. This is a true story. In 1956, a revolution, they started recording Rav Soloveitchik. You don't know what it meant, recording. It's not like here, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 recorders are in front of me. 4 guys had to carry in the recording machine. Yitzchak, do you remember what I'm talking about? And Aaron Batt, Seichet Tzadik Levracha, the Rav only trusted Aaron Batt to do the recording because he knew him from New England. And so Rav Volk says to me after class, "Was geht sich unter mit Rav Soloveitchik, mit der Recorder? What's going on, the recorder?" So I say, "Rebbe, the recording is Sheyurim." So Rav Volk says to me, "Favos nicht bei mir? Why don't they record my Sheyurim?" So I said, "Rebbe, you know, Rav Soloveitchik hat a doctorat from Berlin. Says I'm interested in them to live the doctor. I tried to pacify him. He has a doctorate from Berlin. They're interested in him because of the doctorate." And Rav Volk says to me, I'll never forget it, "Ich kenne nicht philosophy. Ich habe graduiert the Gymnasium in Tel's Yeshiva. I was a graduate of the Tel's Yeshiva Gymnasium, all right? I walked away. I felt so bad. I write this in Washington. I said I didn't have the heart to say to him, Rebbe, a graduate of Tel's Gymnasium is not yet a PhD from the University of Berlin. But this little story gives you insight into Rav Volk, the era, the tragedy. I write in Washington, I give examples of Rav Noach Bornstein, Rav Volk. Hitler killed 6 million, but he destroyed the lives of another 5 million. No one went through the Holocaust, even if they saved their lives unscathed. Everyone paid a price. I'll never forget the documentary that came out about 20 years ago, a YU graduate down on Borough Park, A People Apart, I think it's called. And it's a fabulous documentary. I trust it's on YouTube today. And there's one scene there where he's interviewing this lady in a clothing store. It happened when we were in Borough Park years ago. We bought in this store. We knew the lady. We visited the store and Mrs. Klein. And they're interviewing her, second generation. And she says, I'm always amazed and happy that my children can say no to me. And we look at her. She's amazed. She's happy. Her children can say no. What's there to be happy? And she explained. She grew up. She, her friends, her siblings, never said no to their parents because they knew what their parents went through. Her children, raised in America already, a third generation removed from the Holocaust, they can say no. And you have to have empathy and sympathy. And Baruch Hashem, Hechyeti et Hametim, I brought Rabbi Volk back to life. Then let me go a step further. And here I have to apologize. Everyone I meet across the world, they look at me and they introduce me to their children. This is the man that gave the eulogy for Joe DiMaggio. I've given thousands of shiurim, chidushim, innovative thought, knowledge. But what can I do? The 3-hour shiur I gave on DiMaggio, that caught on from Lakewood to Satmar to Bavav to Gare, wherever you go, the Joe DiMaggio hesped. All right. It was a melechet machshav, I admit. What I'm about to talk about, I fear, will be the most famous part of all my scholarship. At YU, they're already excited. What's the story? There's a picture. It's the quintessential, if I can use a fancy word, the quintessential picture that YU uses to show the Rav teaching. And this picture happens to be my class. My class was very unique. You'll see from some of the names in a few minutes. Barry Lieberman, who you all know from this neighborhood, Barry used to say to me, your class was probably the greatest class the Rav taught. You'll see. Very bright fellows, industrious, successful, matmid.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Unbelievable. But I think it was a moment in time. By 1960, the Rav was in his prime. He was the Rav. When he first came to the yeshiva, you all know they refer to him by his initials. I cannot do that. Until today, in the right-wing world, they refer to him by his first two initials. By the 50s already, the Yotzeit Shurim, he climbed the mountain beyond description. Health, life of happiness, no illness yet, no shiva. But it was not just the Rav. It was a very interesting blend of students. We had a lot of survivors. Kids who themselves had gone through the hell of the war, the camps, and they realized Torah was decimated in Europe. It's up to them to start all over again. You take up a Braunschweiger who I grew up with in the Bronx. When his grandfather walked into the Gerer Rebbe, the Reim, Reb Avraham Mordechai, the third Gerer Rebbe, the man who built Ger and built Agudat Yisrael, the Gerer Rebbe stood up for his grandfather. His grandfather was the Malamed Dabdiki, taught the Gerer Rebbe Aleph Beis, taught him Chumash, taught him Mishnah. That's what he came from. And here it's all decimated. And there were a number of others like him. You take Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. How did they get out alive? His mother was a Schwartz. Anyone here from Baltimore? Who was the leading rabbi in Baltimore in the 1920s, the 1930s, into the 40s? Rav Nachum Schwartz. He was the one that saved his first cousin, Rabbi Aaron's mother and family, from the Holocaust. All that they came from was gone. And then you had a group of American kids like yours truly. And I'm third generation American. We were unique kids. We made up our minds we have to make up for what Europe has lost. So the Rav sat in front of a group of students that their entire desire was to conquer and procreate the world of Torah. So this picture, 60 years ago basically, I can identify the year because there's one student in the picture who only studied with the Rav 1 year. And he's the student, Beryl, who got the Rav to switch into English. His name, Danny Greer. I didn't know at the time that the Rav knew him, knew the family. They were active in Moriah, the shul that they had established on the Upper West Side for the Rav to give Sheyurim. And Danny Greer came over to the Rav after the first shir in September. And I sat right next to the Rav. I'm an ear witness to the whole conversation. And he says, Rebbe, you're denying American youngsters the chance to learn Torah. And the Rav, exhausted, tired after the shiva, what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand Yiddish. What? Tomorrow I will give the shir in English. And I'll give you a bechina after the shir. Fine. The next day the Rav walks in and the whole shir, this was Tuesday, Wednesday was the next shir, Wednesday afternoon, he went back to Boston, and in his English, I still remember Abra Braunschweiger practically in tears of frustration, Yiddish, we come in learning Torah, nicht in Yiddish, das ist ein Mamelaschen. He was so upset. And we struggled, the Rav's English, with his brisker terminology in English. Oh boy, it took a while to adjust. After the shir, the chutzpan Danny Greer walks back to the Rav. Rebbe, I'm ready for my bechina. And the Rav says, you understood? Yes. Good. I don't have strength now to give you a bechina. You understood? I'll continue in English. And at that moment, Torah ended in America. Now, I was intrigued by this picture. About 5 years ago, I went to work. Who are the 29 students in the picture? Now, mind you, there were more students in the classroom. The picture captures, if you know where the Rav taught, it captures the windows. It does not capture the two entrances on the side of room 102 at that time. But we wind up with 29 students, many of them blocked. The Rav's hand, as he's teaching, blocks a student totally. Sometimes all you see is a hand of a student with a jacket. Here you see the back of someone's head, the back of heads right here. Here you see a young guy hiding behind the guy in front of him. That only happens to be, I don't want to use any titles because we were kids then, that only happens to be Heshi Shafta hiding. Chaim Soloveitchik, I showed the picture to Chaim and he couldn't believe what happened here. Chaim, the Rav's son, sat here. He doesn't appear in the picture. He sat near the door. His attitude was, if my father gets angry and upset, I can escape through the door. So he sat near the door. I want you to know, a year ago, if you see the mock-up copy of this book, I have 27 out of 29 identified. In the final version, I have all 29. And here I want to publicly thank my wife. I was aggravating. I now had 28. And the one blocked by the Rav's hand, no one knew who it was. And Malkus said, you see, a little bit is showing of the bow tie under the Rav's hand. He was wearing a bow tie. So Malkus said, check who of your classmates wore bow ties. And I opened up the masmid and there, believe it or not, Izzy Wind, Yisrael Wind, always wore a bow tie. And then it came back to me, that's exactly where he sat. I can still see him with his smile. It was Yisrael Wind, the son of Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Wind, if you remember the name from the yeshiva. I'll add a postscript. Those of you who are Litvakin, close your ears, put in cotton. And those of you who are Hasidim will see Nebuch Rakefet has fallen by the wayside. A postscript is, he came to me in a dream from the other world and said to me, I quote, Arnie, thank you for bringing me back to life in the classroom, end quote. Now, there's something more amazing about this picture. That opens up a discussion that can begin today and end in 49 years. Who is sitting here? You look around at the names, all the future greats of right-wing, YU Orthodoxy, or Torah, I hate the word orthodoxy, use the word Torah, centrist YU Torah, and left-wing, Chovevei Torah. Look who's sitting here. Mark, Abba Brandspiegel, your Rebbe. I'll just quote one name each because I can. You'll see the book, you'll divide it up yourself. He left YU in a storm. One second, Mark. He left YU in a storm. Where did he go? Lander College. YU's not firm enough. It's the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Lander College. Who is sitting here? Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, no, PhD, Harvard, English Literature, Alon Shvut. How do you describe Rabbi Aaron? The heart of centrist Torah, both in the United States and both in the State of Israel. Who else is sitting here? The godfather of Chovevei Torah, Saul Berman. Right or wrong, you know the name, the founder, what went on, Eda. Chovevei Torah has an entire history until it germinated in Avi Weiss's Chovevei Torah. And there are many more. You can go on and on with the names, what became of them. So I want to throw out a challenge. You're living in Lawrence. Anyone want to make a major contribution? Take off a few years. Research the 29 names and what became of them. And then put out a volume, The Class of 1960, Revisited. It will be a bestseller. And then you have to deal with an unbelievable question. Who was the Rav? Here, raise students, centrist, right-wing, left-wing, and all sitting before him, b'dechilu rechimu, yinglach, b'fnei rabam. And here you come to the essential difference of the Rav's hashkafa to most of the hashkafa that our students are raised with today. The Rav, and anyone who writes this book, I'll give him a letter, or her a letter, that the Rav wrote in the mid-60s. It's a letter that is beyond words, but it's not my right to publish it here. It has to be done when this question is raised and analyzed. If you take the Rav's life, and I'm going to be very, very brief now, I'm just speaking in sign language. When you take the Rav's life, he was exposed to so many different points of view. Bris, Chabad, Majitz, Torum Derech Eretz, Berlin, Boston, New York. He could either reach a conclusion that there's one way to live and everyone else is wrong. Well, you can conclude the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. Halacha demands, commands, obedience, surrender. And Hashkafa is multilithic. Each one has to find his own place on the spectrum. As a guy named Rakefet says all the time, Halacha is like a picture frame. It's solid, it's unyielding. But the picture we paint, each one is different, each one in accordance with his abilities and understanding and interests. No two pictures are alike. This was the Rav. The most precious gift I got from my Rebbe was never to force my hashkafa on anybody else. Hashkafa, multilithic. Halacha, monolithic. Chas v'chalila, we should break the frame. And this explains the Rav, explains his Talmidim, explains so much of what has happened in the Torah world. And to a certain degree, I have to say, we're coming full cycle. That even, particularly in Israel today, people are starting to realize that when you come down hard with one way and you're negative towards everyone else, it's not a healthy hashkafa. If we want to succeed, we have to say, Elu vi Elu, believe it and live it, understand it, and be tolerant of it. And that's a precious gift I got from the Rav. And this picture says it all. One step further, and I conclude. My whole doctorate was a farce. Should be annulled. I should have to submit the Silver Era. Why? Bernie Lander took me aside in early 60s and said to me, Arnold, we've been looking for someone like you to do a doctorate on an individual who is very unique. We need a Talmud Chacham and someone who has broader knowledge. We're going to ask you to research the life of my Rebbe, Rabbi Dr. Dov Revel. And with that, he put his hands on my shoulders. We enacted this again in Yerushalayim, in the home of Herb and Toby Willick, many years later. We both remembered it word by word. And he said, Arnold, it's my Rebbe. He has no monument. What you do is going to be his monument. And with that, he started to cry. And if Dr. Land is crying, I started to cry as well. Many years later, I was walking through the streets of Yerushalayim. It's the last year of Dr. Lander's life, and he died before I could tell him. And I'm looking at the new books that came out. This has to be a number of years ago. In the fourth edition of Bernard Revel, you'll see the story in the introduction. And I see a book, Yashar Yisroni, by Yitzchak Elchanan Gibraltar. A memoir of Kovna by a survivor who lives in Bnei Brak. So I pick up the book. Ani medafdef, modern Hebrew, I flip the pages. I see Rabbi Revel's picture. I grab the book. I buy it. I take it home. Next few days, I've gone through all 400 plus pages. And he writes about the Kalvariski family in Kovna. And it rings a bell. My mother always spoke about her mother's family with stories and tzaddikim and yeshurim and Kalvariski. And I paid attention with half an ear, because my mother was born in Harlem, my father was born in Harlem. What the heck do they know about Kovna? Mela, and how Frum, the family, I can't believe it. Never paid attention. I had a cousin's taka, Calvin. They Americanized the Kalvariski. I used to think they were Protestants. The only thing was they wrote K-A-L instead of C-A-L. But believe me, today I hope I'm wrong, but I don't doubt that my thinking was correct. I call my Talmud at Hebrew U, who's an expert in this field, Shol Stampfer, Professor Stampfer. I say, Shol, this Kalvariski family, I think I'm related. He says, Yitzchak Cohen in Gibraltar's alive. He's in B'nai Brak. Call him. I called him, a series of calls, letters. It turns out he knew my grandmother's entire family, and all the stories he told, he validated. Halacha l'maisa, I am a blood relative and probably the only blood relative whose native language is English and is still a Jew of Bernard Revel. Evidently, his grandparents are my great-great-grandparents. Well, if that's the case, I wrote my doctorate about my own relative. All right. I'll submit the Silver Era. But there's much more. When Dr. Lander assigned the doctorate, he didn't know whether there's enough material. Someone spoke to me this morning about a doctorate. I told him the archives have just been opened to the public. You have a world of material available. But then there were no archives, no one knew. So he called Mrs. Revel, Zichrona Levracha, Tzadeket, Chaya Travis Revel, and told her a young man is going to come to visit her at the Broadmoor Hotel, Broadway 102nd Street, where she lived with her son Norman. Everyone else was dead. And can you show him what you have from Rabbi Revel? And she says to Bernard Lander, oh, I'm so glad you called. I have two suitcases ready for the janitor to take out. I'm throwing it all out. I'll cancel his visit and let the young rabbi come. And I walked into the house, I opened up the suitcases. Suffice it to say, my doctorate is based upon those two suitcases. Malka and I and our daughters, we became quite close to Mrs. Revel. She was an elegant lady, a tzaddeket, born and raised in Marietta, Ohio, a public school graduate, medakdeket b'mitzvat kalaka chamura. Rabbi Benjamin Zivitz of Pittsburgh made the shidduch between the young Revel, who was then Rabbi Leventhal's assistant in Philadelphia, with Sarah Travis in Marietta, Ohio. 1909, they got married, two sons, and the rest is history. He was in the oil industry. It's a well-to-do Travis family at the time. He joined the family. 1915, he acquiesced to the request from the yeshiva in New York to come and establish the high school. Fine. Went in Aliyah. Still remember visiting Mrs. Revel's brother and sister-in-law in Yerushalayim. And so many years have passed. And Rabbi Aaron ben Sion Shurin, one of the greats of the earlier generation, taught at Stern College, maybe some of the women had him as a teacher, wrote for the Yiddish press in New York, published books on Gedolei Yisrael, contemporary Hashkafa volumes. And when he died, he left archives. And I have a letter here telling the story. his son and daughter-in-law, my dear friends and students, Esther and David Shurin, are sitting right here. And they allowed another Talmud of mine, Rabbi Jacob or Jacob Sasson, to look into the archives. And he found a letter addressed to the late Rabbi Shurin from Mrs. Revel, a letter that was opened once and never looked at, from 1964 until a year ago. And this letter is the most beautiful gift that anyone could ever have given me. It's a letter to Rabbi Shurin about yours truly starting his research on her late husband. And allow me to add, we're living at times where my mind and heart suffer. Women, feminism, their role in life. You all are aware what's happening. They've come out of the bedroom and out of the kitchen and into the big world. We can't change back the clock. My wife is not happy with all her daughters and granddaughters-in-law working, but my grandsons all can cook, make challah. Each one has a specialty they do. Ribbono shel Olam, I'm a master cook from the freezer to the microwave. But to spend time, innovative food, Ribbono shel Olam, but that's the world today. Well, I go to a doctor. Some of you may look at my face. A year ago, 2 years, 3 years, red. This is my student. Cleared up my first, the top dermatologist in Yerushalayim, Dr. Leona Fisher. Well, if a woman can do all this and learn Torah, why can't she be a rabbi? And boy, we struggle. And you've all heard my Sheurim. I'm going to speak about this next week in Long Beach. I have to say, the Rakefet plan, I hear people repeating it time and again, including the latest volume by the interview with Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, which is a fabulous volume that just came out, the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. When they deal with him with the feminist problems, he's quoting me word by word by word, the Rakefet plan. But you all know that yours truly is not in favor of ordaining women, giving them the title rabbis. I have my own program, which I think satisfies halacha and satisfies feminism, and it's lekavod ulatiferet. But one thing I will tell you, if anyone asked me who gave me smicha, it's this letter from Mrs. Sarah Revel. Halavai, I should live up to what she writes about me in this letter. So I'm very honored, thrilled, and very thankful to the Shurins and to Jacob Sasson that they made this letter available to me. It warms my heart that I can bring back the memory of the Travis family, the Revel family. Just remember that Rabbi Revel can only come to New York and build what he built because the Travis family supported him, supported the yeshiva, belev v'nefesh, and above all, with the monetary needs. So I wish to reiterate, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's a schut, and the four sections, perhaps you'll enjoy one more than the other, but I have the feeling that more than the lumdus in the first section and the history in the second section and the hashkaf in the third section, it's the fourth section that will live on. I want to conclude. One has to be thankful to the Ribbono shel Olam. When the Mossad tapped us on the shoulder, May of 1980, I had no idea what I was getting into. You remember the call, I write about it in Washington, I relive it many times. Harav Rakefet, ata mukhan lekabel sicha, beli legalot et pratei hasicha. And I answered, you know, I figured I have to be honest with you. I don't want to offend anyone from my female students, but I've gotten anonymous calls from girls I taught. I can tell you stories. I will not. Doing all types of sins. And I said, I'm not a priest. This is not the Catholic religion. what you're doing is terrible, etc. All right, whether they listened or didn't listen, I don't know. So I figured it's another one of those calls. And the lady passes the phone. We became very good friends with Mela and the legendary Aryeh Kroll. Shalom, Pomer Deber Aryeh. הרב רקפת, אנחנו יודעים שאתה יודע איך ללמד גמרא, האם אתה מוכן ללמד גמרא במוסקבה? So I said yes. Said yes, because my wife always laughed at me and she would say, if they ever asked you to go to Russia, you'd be such a chicken, your yellow feathers would show. You wouldn't have the guts. But then I started shaking. He says, who will take care of your children? He lists my children by name, by age. Well, we told him the eldest is already a teenager. We have a brother-in-law, Malka's brother, living across the street. We'll manage. And the saga began, which continues until today. Well, when you've worked in communist empire, when you've seen the results of your labor, when you see the thousands of people from Russia, communist Russia, Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. When you just see the 13 girls that were sponsored by the West Hempstead community this past year, that Malka and I brought from Odessa, all college graduates, to a two-week tour in Israel that began in my classroom with my Russian-speaking female students translating yours truly into Russian, and then telling about their own life story and translating back from Russian to English for my regular students to understand, you're overwhelmed by Chasdei Hashem. And that's why I continue B'lei V'Nefesh to support Shvat Ami. So I have to tell you in advance, I don't take a 1 cent of royalties. All the money for the various volumes that Shvat Ami has published go into Shvat Ami, the Kabbalah L'Tiferet, La Hagdil Torah, Ula Hadira.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.